Wednesday. Beautiful Wednesday here in Phoenix, Arizona. 82 degrees here yesterday. Can you believe that? New high temperature for my birthday, in fact. 82 degrees here in Phoenix, Arizona yesterday while I was running up and down South Mountain numerous times. Great to be with you today. We did a Radio Free Geneva on Monday. We're going to try to sneak something in on Friday as well. So three programs, but of course I'm not sure what's going to happen next week. Christmas right in the middle of the week is going to sort of mess things up. But anyways, wanted to have the opportunity to talk about this. This is, look, many of us have been warning about the slippery slope. But I've never really, it's not a slippery slope anymore. It is a cliff. It's not, oh, we're going to start sliding down this thing and then accelerate. No. It's not the Wile E. Coyote thing where you stand out there in the middle of the air for a while and then all of a sudden, that doesn't work. I think we are sort of in that situation. There's sort of a momentum for a second and then, and I'm talking about the culture, of course. We've been warning people, mess with God's creation and God's going to mess with you. He doesn't even really have to do much. I mean, you mess with creation, and the creation is going to get you. God designed men and women, and God gave gender, and it was good. And the first institution amongst men that God established was that of marriage. And he established it, one man, one woman. Yeah, there have been people who have broken that part, one man with many women, and look through the history of the Bible. What's the result every single time? Heartache and disappointment and sin, and it's always everything you see. And it just drives me crazy when people who really don't know anything about the Bible pretend to be Bible scholars, and they say, well, look at all different kinds of marriages in the Bible. In fact, I can't believe I did this. I'll have to wait till next time. I have a video of a kid at his bar mitzvah up in Seattle promoting gay marriage. I've got to play that. Got to respond to that. I was going to do that today. Forgot to queue it up because we were doing a bunch of other stuff on other topics. But we'll get to that. Someone remind me to do that on Friday or something like that if we can. Anyway, the reality is that the cultural push to redefine marriage, the fact that so many people, even people in leadership positions, have accepted one of the most ridiculous, absurd arguments I've ever heard in my life, and that is that redefining marriage is it's a matter of civil rights. Marriage equality. You're for marriage inequality. And as I've said many times, not a single person I've ever met who said that actually believed in marriage equality. Not a one. Not a single one. None of them has had the guts to look me in the eye and say, yes, I should be able to marry my mom or my dad. But I think they might be moving that way. Because as you've all heard, a number of days ago now, a federal judge declared Utah's polygamy laws unconstitutional. Judge Clark Wadoop. Wadoop? Wadoop? Not sure where you put the emphasis on which syllable, but Judge Clark Wadoop's 91-page ruling issued Friday sets a new legal precedent in Utah effectively decriminalizing polygamy. Now, we had all said, everybody, Michael Medved, years ago, was saying, it's over with. Polygamy will be legalized. It will be legalized. It has to be. The argumentation, if marriage is just what you feel it is, if you feel like you're a guy and you want to marry another guy, and because you feel that way, then you should be given that right, that freedom, then if one guy wants to marry 10 gals, who cares? Why not? Marriage isn't anything that we can actually define anymore. But let's follow this through. Let's think about something else that happened just recently. Heard what happened in Belgium? I might have this. Where'd it go? Oh, yeah. Duh. I might. Could it be that far back? No, I don't see it here. I thought I had saved to my pocket thing. I guess I didn't. I suppose I could track it down eventually. But Belgium is in the process, either has or is in the process of, Belgium has become the center of the culture of death. The euthanasia movement there has infected the minds of the populace. And so now you have people who are not terminally ill at all, ending at all. There are doctor deaths all over the place. And now the movement is to grant to children, the right to end their lives. All right? Now, this to me is one of the clearest evidences of absolute dehumanization of mankind. What is the result of the secular mindset? The result of the secular mindset is that we become absolutely self-destructive. All simple common sense flies out the window and we become self-destructive. That's what you have going on in Belgium. This is not enlightenment, intelligentsia. This is abject stupidity. But it comes from judgment. And so, you are granting to children the right to kill themselves. Now think with me for a second. If a child of 8 has the right to end their life, who can possibly argue that they don't have the right to have sex? Right? I mean, if you've got the right to kill yourself, then you clearly have the right to choose whether you're going to engage in sexual behavior, right? And we all know it is an established fact that lurking in the shadows of the whole homosexual movement throughout its history has been this constant undercurrent of lower the age of accountability, lower the age of consent, lower the age of consent. And so how long until somebody makes that argument legally? And the result? Pedophilia. It's already being discussed. I mean, all you need to do is have a few PhDs in psychology and psychiatry come in and say they're wired this way. That's just the way they are. It's natural, just like homosexuality is natural or polyamory is natural. And there you go. You've got pedophilia. Now, let's tie something else in. Just recently, there it is. There's in the chat channel, someone just posted the Belgium allows terminally ill child euthanasia. And we all know the terminally ill part is just how you get it in, because that's how they do it with the adults. And now you don't have to be terminally ill. You just despair of life. Let's think of something else that just happened. There was a legal suit just recently. And there were people who were attempting to do what? To have human rights and civil rights assigned to chimpanzees so that they could be set free. The suit failed this time. This is the first attempts normally do. But again, given the secular worldview, given the view that there is nothing transcendent or important about man in the first place, given that there's nothing special about man's creation, we're not made in the image of God, there is an image of God to be made in the first place. What happens when the distinctions between the species are broken down in the thinking of men? Follow that one through. I am made happy by marrying my German Shepherd. In fact, I love my German Shepherd more than I love my husband, so I want to marry my German Shepherd. Well, why not? What's the basis? I mean, the gag reflex is not a proper basis anymore, right? And so, if you are made happy, more happy by a non-human companion than by a human companion, and the distinctions between the species are breaking down, then why not? Why not? If it's all just a matter of what makes you happy, how you are wired, if all of our cultural norms and establishments are just simply to be defined by what makes you happy. Then if you're made happy by marrying a dog or a cat, horse, whatever, goldfish, whatever. I mean, marriage is just simply a temporary legal relationship anyways, right? That's all it is. So there comes bestiality, pedophilia. It's all there. Because we have no moral foundation. And if you argue against those things, I can guarantee you, I can just simply sit there and say, bigot, bigot. That's because that's all you've been doing to us. That's how you argue, bigot, bigot, bigot. Just repeat it enough times. I win. I win. It's not a slippery slope. It's a cliff. And there's no parachute. There's no climbing back up. You step off, you're gone. It's a long way down to the bottom. Long way down to the bottom. So what do we do? Well, again, we're in that situation. The moral and ethical fiber of the Roman Empire disappeared. And so did the Roman Empire. God has a way of judging those people who sin against his law and giving their place and their land to another people. And that's what we're facing. That's what we're facing. We are therefore called to be salt and light and to be a prophetic voice. And as we, has it struck anybody else as just really strange that the United States of America, we're sitting around hitching rides with the Russians while the Chinese are landing on the moon? I remember sitting in a classroom as a very young boy watching incredibly. I wonder what the resolution on that was. We talk about HD resolution and stuff. And man, that might have been 320 by 240 at best. You know, it was bad. It was, remember those just looked like Pillsbury Doughboy guys bouncing around on the surface of the moon. But oh, it was exciting. We had conquered the moon. Haven't been back in a long time, have we? No. And now we are hitching rides with the Russians and the Chinese and the Brazilians. Everybody else, they're still going, and we've turned NASA into a mess. That happened. Well, you get the leadership that you deserve. You get the leadership that you deserve. So here's what happens when you have a federal judge declares Utah polygamy law unconstitutional. Now, of course, the next question that crosses our mind is, let's say this stands, and it will, there's no way around it. Unless there is just a wholesale flood of repentance. This will stand, and polygamy, gay marriage, which is an oxymoron, all of this will be what our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are growing up in the midst of. What's Mormonism going to do? What's Mormonism going to do? I mean, they've been waiting, huh? Well, yeah, you know, 20 years ago, wouldn't have had much of a problem answering that question. I knew what they would have done. But now when they're embarrassed about exaltation to godhood, what are they going to do? I mean, they know they have many polygamists in their midst, even in the practicing LDS church. As long as you don't, you know, stick it out there and stick it in people's faces, you can be a polygamist in Mormonism. We all know that. That is a fact of Utah, Northern Arizona, and Southern Idaho life. But the real question is, while they're trying to mainstream, while they're trying to get, build bridges to evangelicals, what happens? It's still in their scriptures, but there's other things in their scriptures they're embarrassed about. So what happens when this judge's decision is upheld, as it will be? As it will be. The striking down of DOMA has set the grounds for the utter destruction, the making of absolutely an irrelevant thing legally, the concept of marriage. So, all different forms of it are going to exist, and hence, once you have all different forms of it, it itself becomes irrelevant. So, what's going to happen with Mormonism then? Once it's there, how much pressure will be placed upon the leadership to believe its own scriptures and to reinstitute plural marriage? I have absolutely no answer to that question. I do not know what they would do. Like I said, when I first started talking with Mormons years and years ago, back in the 1980s, 30 years ago, I would not have hesitated for a moment to say what they were going to do. Not for a moment. Because even the young missionaries would argue in defense of polygamy. In fact, they liked to get on that subject. Now, those older missionaries, now they're older. They're in their mid-40s now. So, would they push for it? What about Mormon women? Oh, man, sounds like I got to stop that pack of day thing. No, just a little bit of leftover from what I had before. I don't know, but boy, it's going to be interesting to watch.
I'm thinking of a phrase the U.S. government tends to use when CIA people are caught doing things they shouldn't be doing. We disavow all knowledge of so-and-so and their actions. Disavowing Brigham Young and all those wives that are buried with him up on the hill there.
Yeah, well, there are. They just, last week, in that priesthood and the blacks thing on their website, they pretty much threw Brigham Young under the bus on that one. I mean, they really did. I didn't have much time to expand upon it, but wow. If Brigham Young is the line through which the priesthood authority was passed to the modern church, you can make a strong argument. I bet the polygamist groups are making a strong argument that they are the only true followers of that priesthood line, because they've always argued the Salt Lake line had collapsed on that issue. Now they've got pretty much proof. I have to wonder.
Well, you remember the guy that was in camo every time we go up there?
Yeah.
And he and his two wives were standing there, and he's looking for another one, and he talked to the sisters. And I'll never forget talking with him. And he's like, these guys fell away long ago. We're the true religion, and these guys fell off the wagon. They don't believe in blood atonement. They don't believe in all these other things, and they are part and parcel of being Mormon.
Yep, it's true. No question about it. So that's going to be very, very interesting to observe as well. But obviously the big thing is living a Christian life and honoring marriage and living the way that Christ would have us live, man, that is going to look so strange in 21st century America, as it looks strange in Europe right now. I mean, in many Scandinavian countries, the idea of marriage for life is looked down upon as being so old-fashioned. Marriage is just something, it's a temporary thing. It's a temporary thing. You know, keep that wedding dress around. Because you get to use it, I suppose, at least you get to use the wedding dress multiple times. It's always been a bit of a bummer to only get to use it once. Well, I'm not even going to repeat that. No. warning, danger, Will Robinson, danger, yes. Say, aren't you glad that I put the brakes on that? Because I would have blamed you for it anyways. And hopefully no one will turn the volume way up real loud and find out what you had just suggested. Because Aren't you the one that got us in trouble on that before?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're the one that started it. I think you're the one that started it. I'm not...
Not going there.
Anyway, had to comment on that. It was... I don't know. I do not even know where the challenges that my my daughter, my son-in-law and daughter are flying in this weekend for the Christmas holidays, bringing little Clementine, who, as I proved on the blog, found my explanation of Matthew 24:36 just fascinating, as you can tell. And I'm honored to get a chance to explain things to her in that way. But they're coming in, and the challenges that they are going to face, just so far beyond anything I could have imagined at their age, that it makes me feel just inadequate. Utterly, all of us are inadequate. All of us are inadequate. None of us are adequate for the task. Only Christ can make us adequate. All right, moving on from there, I unfortunately must spend some time once again keeping you up to date on some issues here. Well, real quickly, hit my blog if you haven't. I posted a video, Lane told me about this video, and I have absolute proof. I just realized I'm looking at the freeze screen, the splash screen, whatever you call a thing, of the YouTube video. Well, actually, I'll take that back. It's just where I happen to stop it. But anyway, it's similar to that. In the background, you can tell this was not shot in the United States, because in the background is a European, a German electrical outlet. See, there was evidence that this was shot someplace else. I posted a 50-minute interview that I did with two of my students at the Evangelical Biblical Training Center in Berlin this past June. They asked if they could meet with me after class once to record something on Roman Catholicism, because they live one lives in the Czech Republic and one lives in Poland, and Romanism, of course, is a major issue there. And so we did a 50-minute interview. And it really went well. It really did. So I posted it on the blog, because it only had 217 views when Lane found it. And it has 16 more now. Woo! but anyway, that's up there as well. Now, the reason nobody was finding it is because the title is in Czech. So no one searches for my name in Czech, which doesn't make much sense, obviously. Over sometime yesterday, I believe, yesterday morning, I think, might have been the day before. I think it was yesterday morning. Someone on Twitter sent me a link to a sermon by Ergen Kanner at the North Metro Baptist Church from 2009. And whenever I'm sent these links anymore, I have learned, and you need to learn, that the very first thing you do is you save it to your hard drive. You download it, you save it to your hard drive. Because once it's mentioned, there is no question at all that there is at least one person, maybe more, who follows my Twitter feeds, who follows my Facebook, who reads the blog every single day for only one purpose, to see what I'm saying about Ergen Kanner. It used to be, back when he was at Liberty, some poor graduate student that got stuck doing that, one of his graduate aides. I don't know who it is now. But we are followed very, very carefully. And when someone mentions something to us, you can be certain that the resource will be cannerized. And this is a verb. It needs to be added to the dictionary. To cannerize something is to seek to suppress the multitudes of examples of misstatements on the part of Ergun Canner between 2001 and 2010, specifically making claims that now are specifically admitted to be untrue. No, not admitted. Now they give a different story than the misstatements that were made in sermon after sermon after sermon after sermon over months and years by Ergun Canner. That's not a lie. Ask Peter Lumpkins. That's not a lie. But you can misstate the same thing repeatedly until confronted with the truth. But that's not a lie. Because an independent investigator said so. We can't tell you who he is, but he said so, so we believe whatever he says. Yes, Jim Jones. Anyway, so I started listening to it. It was nothing new. But once again, here was just another of the examples where we can provide, over the course of years, the same man saying the same things in multiple contexts, which for rational people is the very definition of the term lying. All right. Well, let's start off if we can. Now, what we're going to try to do something here, which we've never done before, which will be of absolutely no use to you on the audio file. I was listening to Rush today on the way in, and he was talking about the things that the current U.S. regime is doing, just, the stuff promoting Obamacare and you know, you saw the one with the chick with the birth control pills and stuff. I mean, it's just immoral. It's just disgusting. It's embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. It's Sodom and Gomorrah all over again. But he was talking about some guy in a tweet now who's in pajamas or gal. They couldn't even tell what it was, androgynous. Talking about how spend the cold days of December talking about healthcare. And he says, I'm going to turn on the Ditto cam and show this to you. Well, okay, great. I'm driving down the road. A lot of good that's going to do me. Well, we're going to pull the same stunt with you. Now, if you're listening only by audio and not watching on video, we're going to try to show you some things on the video feed. And we did once before try to do this. Not video, but we did some graphics before. Let's start off with the picture. Can we do the picture? All right. Let me show you, and I have this on my own screen, which I do not have control over what Rich is going to be doing. But let's go ahead and put it up. Here is, if you try to find what we linked to on Vimeo just yesterday, this is what you will see. It says, Vimeo, page not found. Sorry, Dr. Ergun Canner was deleted at 11:36:29, Wednesday, December 18th, 2013. We have no more information about it on our mainframe or elsewhere. It's been cannerized. This is the picture of the verbal form of the word canner. We mentioned it. Well, it was mentioned to me. I think I may have responded to the person who tweeted it to me. And poof. Now, here's the question that I have. Who deleted this? It has to have been the church. Obviously, they're the only ones that have access to it. But the question is, did the church, because someone mentioned on Twitter, and I'm assuming, I could be wrong about this, but I think it was tweeted to me by 60 Debates. I think 60 Debates did. And his picture, by the way, is very scary. Have you seen that picture? No, that's not as bad, okay? He looks, the little teeny tiny picture makes him look like he's huge. He seems like a bigger guy. But that making the thing go all the way along the bottom of the face there, that's a little scary anyways. Anyway, 60 Debates had sent it to me. And he indicated that he did, as he said, tag the church when he told me about that. So is it possible the church saw it and pulled it independently?
Yeah, it's possible.
What is more likely? I think it's much more likely that there was a phone call made. Maybe an email. Because as we know, there's someone right now listening to what I'm saying, associated with Eric Cantor. And his whole job, or her whole job, is to report back to Cantor what's being said. They're talking about this. They're talking about that. And I'm going to talk about another sermon today. And if you want to hear that sermon, have your own copy, you better get it instantly. Because it would be highly surprising. Highly surprising. If, upon my mentioning this sermon and playing it, because it contains, well, here, pop up the computer here. Let me just play you one section of this sermon. I won't tell you where it is from yet, but this is why this sermon is a prime suspect, a prime candidate, I'm sorry, to be canonized. Listen to this.
We were not the casual Muslim. We were not the comfortable Muslim. We were the devout. We wore gefia. We spoke Arabic and Turkish. We read the Quran. We fasted 40 days during Ramadan. We lived by the rules of halal and haram and mushbu, the dietary restrictions. We prayed 5 times a day facing Mecca. You know, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alhamdulillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, during our prayer time. We didn't look like you. We didn't act like you. I didn't dress like you. And let me be very clear with you. I hated you. Because I was raised to.
So there you go. There you have the man who now admits the only language he speaks other than English is Swedish. And he hasn't, just a few words Swedish. There he is talking about speaking Arabic and Turkish and hated you, didn't know you, la 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 la. It's the same old lies over and over, spoken over and over and over again. No one with a scintilla of honesty can any longer defend this man. Never could. But how many examples do you have to be hit over the head with before you go, okay, he lied. He lied. So, that's why this sermon will be canonized, for obvious reasons, because, you know, that's just how it works. Now, interestingly enough, that sermon I just played you a segment from is almost identical. It's the same sermon. It's the same sermon that we're going to look at video-wise. There is only 94 days between the two of them. They're both in 2009. So Cantor has his sermons. And when you travel, you know, I've repeated sermons, not quite in this way. And especially when you listen to Cantor's sermons, they're 65% jokes. They're the same stories, same illustrations. You know, I don't drive a taxi. You know, I don't have the, you know, the gold chain, the hair, and, you know, all the racial stereotypes and all the rest of that. You know, wear my laundry on my head, you know, which the first time was funny, but the 10th time is pathetic. But anyway, this sermon, which we did save and which we will now play for you, not all of it, but portions of it, this sermon was the same sermon that he preaches later on. Same stories. Start off with the, you know, I was raised in Istanbul stuff. And then go talk about Jerry Tackett and talk about being a consistent witness and, you know, look at everything that God did. He saved me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It almost doesn't matter what text he uses. He ends up in the same place. He ends up in the same place. So why would someone, if all this is true, why is it gone? Why was it deleted? What must it be like to live your life listening to someone like me, and then you have to go, oh, I forgot that one. Oh, doggone it. Okay, I need to get the number of that church. Where is that? Didn't they just go through his calendar? And go, okay, I went to that church. Did I lie there? Yep, better go contact them. Oh, here's another place. Oh, better contact. Well, actually, that just would have been his entire calendar. What's it like to live a life like this? To have to, and what's the phone call like? The pastor Smith, I got a favor to ask these Muslims and these pagans. You know, they're really going after me and my brother, and they're using the sermon from your church. There's nothing wrong with the sermon, of course. It's fine, but they're twisting it out of, they're editing it and changing it and stuff like that. Wouldn't it actually be best to leave that there so you could prove the editing and change? Yeah. What do you say? I cannot imagine the seared conscience that allows you to do this kind of thing. I can't understand it. Was there something you...
I was just going to ask if you want me to run these back to back, or you want to comment on.
No, my memory is not good enough to remember all that. So let's play. We're going to try to play the first video. The first, it's a short portion. This is at the beginning of the presentation, and here's what Aaron Kanner had to say at the North Metro Baptist Church in 2009.
The only reason that you could understand me is not because of my raising. I was raised in Istanbul, Turkey, and came to America with my brothers, my father. My father is Ajar Mehmet Janer, and died in 99, but he was a muazzin in the mosque. Emir is my youngest brother. Erdem is the middle brother. And, you know, we are all those things that you could imagine. We are immigrants. We are Turkish.
Okay, so there you have Istanbul again. Remember, he was born in Sweden, went from Sweden to the United States. We can play over and over again and have numbers of times his statements, born in Istanbul, raised in Turkey, everything I learned, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just, there isn't any question whatsoever about his claims. None. And yet there are people to this day who continue to try to defend him. Well, you just misunderstood him. But there he is. There he is. And interestingly enough, within 3 months of that, I forget which one was first. I think this next one was 3 months later. Listen to what he says here.
It took me forever to learn English listening to you. I'm an immigrant. I'm Turkish, 100% Turkish.
100% Turkish. His mom is not Turkish. Mom's not Turkish. He's not 100% Turkish. It's a lie. It's a lie. Just like this is a lie later on in that same sermon.
You can go to iTunes and get all of my debates for free. No subscription or anything. You just type in my name, you get the debates, and you'll see I debate anybody.
He's a warrior. He debates anybody. We just can't find any of them. I mean, he had some discussions with some people who embarrassed him, like the poor old oneness Pentecostal pastor that turned him inside out pretty easily enough. He debates anybody except me. Yeah. That's the one exception. We won't. I'm a warrior. Yes. Yeah. The warrior president. Anyway, then what happens after that intro, then, of course, he talks about his wife, and he talks about Southern women, and they'll kill you in their sleep, and all the rest of that kind of stuff. I mean, and then he'll, you know, read the text, and then he'll start talking about a few things, and then eventually he gets back to telling his story again. And so here's the story, video version, from the North Metro Baptist Church.
My father built mosques as a muazzin. And as a muazzin, he was faithful and devout. We lived by Islam. We were not casual Muslims. We were absolutely devoted Muslims. We dressed differently. We ate differently by the rules of halal and haram. We spoke differently. We said our rakats. We followed the five pillars of Islam. We read the Quran, kissed it, placed it to our forehead, put it on the highest shelf of the house. We lived and died by this. And I had no friends who were Christians or Jews. Surah 5 of the Quran says, do not take friends from among the Jews and the Christians. You bring their punishment upon you, their condemnation upon you. I wanted nothing to do with you. I disliked Christians. And until I entered high school, I had never had one as a friend. Jerry Tackett changed that. For 4 years, Jerry Tackett hunted me down. He invited me to everything. Tackett would not shut up. Some of us, we hit the door. If they say no, we move on and we forget them forever. I don't know if he was trying to earn an RA badge or a GA coronation or some sort of a WANA thing. I have no idea. This guy was relentless. Jerry Tackett lowered me to the feet of Jesus. I finally decided going into my senior year, 17 years old, that I would show him. I had thought I found a way to shut him up. He was a youth group member. He was a kid. He was awesome. Because I would be in my prayer closet. I would be praying with my rug in the locker room. Look up, you know, forehead to the ground. Look up, and there's Tackett. Hey, man, can I give you a Bible? I was like, would you just leave me alone? Nope. So I decided I would show him. And I told Tackett, I will go with you to your church if you come with me to my masjid, to my mosque. And he did. Jerry Tackett walked into the Islamic Foundation on Broad Street in Columbus, Ohio, with a Jesus Saves t-shirt. And a Bible in his hand.
All right. Thank you very much. There you go. There's certain. Now, I had not heard the Jerry Tackett going to the masjid thing with the Jesus Saves t-shirt before. But he repeats the same story 94 days either before or after. So at least in 2009, that had become a part of the story. I don't ever remember that before 2009. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't even attempt to invest the brain power into keeping track all of his stuff. But there's where he makes that kind of a claim. And I think, let me see if this is queued up.
So this high school senior, this 17-year-old.
Yeah, here's where he tells that story in the other sermon.
So this high school senior, this 17-year-old boy named Jerry Tackett, walked to the mosque on Broad Street in Columbus, Ohio, walked in with a Bible in his hand and a Jesus Saves t-shirt.
Clearly, a real applause line.
That's hardcore. That's hardcore right there. SECW. He walked in like this. Hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. My father goes, I go, who is this kid? I went over to Tackett, and I was like, all right.
Now, realize he doesn't mention this, but his parents were divorced at this point in time. He will often say, I lost my family. He doesn't mention that actually he lost his dad. Parents were divorced and had been for, what, 9 years at this point in time? Something like that? Yeah. And his mom was not a practicing Muslim, at least according to Emir. Now, we can let Emir and Ergen fight out the details about all that. Emir has said she basically sort of became a hippie. And hippie and Muslim, generally not the same thing. And then claiming to, now instead of in the bathroom, now he's in the locker room doing the prayers, and he's wearing Muslim garb. Is that possible? I suppose it's possible. But isn't it strange that when we look at the high school yearbook, there's no evidence of that. And the only pictures that have ever been shown is when he's in his father's house, which is where you'd expect that he would wear some type of, you know, something on his head or something, a kufi or something. But the pictures of him in the yearbook, he's dressed like any other kid in the 1980s. And then we have that strange tweet that Emir sent to Ergen in, what was it, late 2009, early 2010, where he points out that Ergin played a homosexual in a high school play. Now, I'm just wondering, did when Ergin showed up for the play, did he take off his Islamic garb and change into the clothing of a homosexual to play the homosexual in the play? And then put his garments back on and go do his prayers? Is that what we're expected to believe? That would be interesting. Suppose it's a possibility. You know, if we want to give the man the benefit of the doubt, but he hasn't given us much reason for the benefit of the doubt, has he? Not when we pile misstatement upon misstatement upon misstatement upon misstatement over and over and over again. Rather interesting. Now, the sermon that I was making reference to that you might want to grab while you can is from Calvary Chapel Old Bridge in New Jersey. Calvary Chapel Old Bridge. Now, the current pastor of Calvary Chapel Old Bridge is a man by the name of Lloyd Pulley. I know Lloyd Pulley from somewhere. I think, I am almost certain that I've been thinking about it. I think Lloyd Pulley is an old friend of mine, a comrade in arms of mine, in arguing with Mormons and others on the old Open Bible Echo in the old BBS days of FidoNet. There was someone named Lloyd Pulley that I knew back in those days. And my recollection is we were on the same side. We may have had a few differences, but we were on the same side most of the time. And I have a feeling, unless it's different Lloyd Pulley, there could be more than one Lloyd Pulley, but it just strikes me. I almost feel like writing to the pastor and saying, do you remember me? Did we, years ago, you know, he looks like around that age. But Lloyd Pulley is the pastor of this church. Whether he was in 2009 or not, I don't know. But it's Calvary Chapel, Old Bridge. And as I said, within 94 days, one way or the other, of the debate, not the debate, the presentation at North Metro Baptist Church, I mean, Cantor had a very active traveling schedule. He's probably been very busy cannerizing the net. I mean, he's, can you imagine? I can't imagine what it would be like for me to have to try to go back and ask all the churches I've spoken at to purge what I said. I'd change my name and move to Alaska. I mean, I cannot imagine doing this kind of thing. And yet that's what Ergin Cantor has been doing. And it's a shame. Absolute shame. But, I was pointed to this, presentation this morning. Excuse me. And once again, same sermon, same text, same jokes, same order. But sometimes he embellishes. So here's just a couple sections. I already played you a couple sections from this. But here's the section where, you know, right at the heart of where he starts his story.
My father's name is Ajar Mehmedjaneh. I say it out loud because just telling the story, you don't get to do that often. And most Muslims who are Muslims have never met a murtad. I am a murtad. I left Islam. I am a believer in Jesus Christ. My father was an ulema in the mosque. An ulema is a scholar.
No, an ulema is a scholar's. An alim is a scholar. Alim is knowledge. Ulema are the scholars. It's a plural word. Now, remember, he's going to say that in their home they spoke Arabic, but he can't tell the difference between a singular and a plural. And on the excuse sheet, should be called the Norman Geisler lie sheet. The Norman Geisler lie sheet on Norman Geisler's website. Now, I'm not sure if they've pulled this part, because they've pulled other parts of it. But on the Norman Geisler lie sheet, it is said that Ergin Cantor speaks as much Arabic as you'd expect any Muslim to speak, or what's common for Muslims to speak. Well, most Muslims know the difference between the ulema and an alim, but Ergin Cantor does not. So, there you go.
and he was an architect by vocation. And when we came to America in 78...
When did we come to America? Well, according to the Bruton Parker College website, who elected him as president just last week, it was not 1978, as we documented last week. Just for the folks there, Bruton Parker...
And when we came to America in 78... And when we came to America in 78... And when we came to America in 78...
Just so you get the message, that's not the only time he said it. He said it over and over and over. Misstatement? Just hard to get out of the mind, I guess. Yeah, that's what we're being told. And then I played this one earlier, but I'm going to stop and start this time.
We were not the casual Muslim. We were not the comfortable Muslim. We were the devout. We wore geffia. We spoke Arabic and Turkish.
We spoke Arabic and Turkish, and we wore the geffia. Well, I am sure that there were times in Erkin Karan's life where he wore a geffia. Of course. It was probably prior to the divorce, and maybe at times we went over Dad's house after the divorce. He probably wore a geffia. What is he trying to communicate to us? Well, he wore that when he was in high school. He was hardcore. He spoke Arabic. He spoke Turkish. Didn't speak either. Oh, I'm sure he knows a few words of Turkish. I doubt he knows almost any words of Arabic outside the normal terms of Arabic that anyone who studies even the most basic levels of Islam learns. But anyone who studies even the basic levels of Islam knows how long Ramadan is. Ramadan is a month. It is a lunar month. It's the ninth month, if I recall correctly. In the Islamic calendar, it's special because Laylatul Qadr falls during Ramadan, and that's the night that the entire Quran was sent down to the angel Jibril. Now, I am a student of Islam, and I know that. But here's Erkin Karan. Now, this is 2009. He has been traveling around. That first splash presentation that Erkin Karan made at what, First Baptist Dallas, was it? Was a matter of weeks after 9/11. So we're talking about 8 years now. 7, 8 years. And what does he say?
We read the Quran. We fasted 40 days during Ramadan.
What was that? Let's try it again.
We fasted 40 days during Ramadan. We fasted 40 days during Ramadan.
Erkin, why were you fasting 40 days during Ramadan? I mean, there's that big celebration, Eid, you know, that comes at the end of Ramadan, sort of like Christmas for Muslims. You kept fasting during that? Or did you start early? 40 days. How can you not know that? Every Muslim on the planet knows that. And yet he repeated that error over and over and over again. How? I don't understand. Does he not talk with people afterwards? Are there no people in the audience come up and go, I lived in a Muslim country, and isn't Ramadan a lunar month, so it's 29, 30 days most? But I don't know.
We lived by the rules of halal and haram and mushbu, the dietary restrictions. We prayed five times a day facing Mecca. You know, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alhamdulillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, doing our prayer time.
All right, now Rich is getting fancy. All right, he's feeling a little froggy in the other room. All right, he got that second clip to play. Only took us three times, but we got the second clip to play. And so now he's feeling a little on the froggy side. And so he wants to show y'all on the live stream, because I think he wants everybody to watch now. You know, he wants to show y'all on the live stream. Go ahead. The high school pictures from Erkin Karan. That's where he's wearing the geffia and is praying on the the bow tie. Oh, okay. Geffia is actually his Swedish translation of the Arabic for bow tie. All right. Well, we have found a way for Erkin Karan to be truthful. Is that the Swedish translation of the Arabic term for bow tie is geffia? That's okay. I got it. All right. Good. Thank you very much for that. There's also a picture somewhere of him in the play. And the way he's gesturing, I can't prove this, but my theory is that the picture of him in the play is where he's playing the homosexual, because the way he's got his hand and stuff like that, let's just say it would be highly unusual for a Christian hating, jihad believing, we are by ourselves Muslim to be involved in doing high school plays. Seems a little out of place, but hey, what can I say? Yeah. Anyhow, you tracked it down? No. Okay. I'll just play one more thing here. We're almost out of time as it is.
We didn't look like you. We didn't act like you. I didn't dress like you. And let me be very clear with you. I hated you. Because I was raised to.
He didn't dress like you except for every picture in the yearbook. So evidently, what Eric Cantor did in high school was whenever someone from the photo club showed up with a camera, he jumped out of his geffia into normal Ohio kid clothes, which he must have worn under his geffia. And then once they took the picture then he put it back up. That must be how that worked. What is it like to live a life like this? I cannot begin to understand it. I cannot begin to understand it. There is actually one other development there, but it's ongoing, and so I'll hold off on a discussion of it until we have more time. But the cover-up goes on. And will Lloyd Pulley and the folks at Calvary Chapel Old Bridge get a phone call from Eric Cantor? Will they give in and delete the sermon? That is the question. I hope not. I may see if I can't contact Pastor Pulley and see if he's not the person I used to know, and inform him of that particular sermon, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Maybe by my being so open about this, they will not feel they have the freedom to even try. I don't know. But the mountain of information only grows. You cannot purge the internet. Its memory is too long. Thanks for listening. I'm not sure when we'll schedule things on Friday. I'll need to let you know about that, like we normally do, but we're going to try to get together with you on Friday as well. Maybe continue Radio Free Geneva. We'll see. But till then, God bless.